At the end of the college football season, there's a kind of a merry-go-round of coaches leaving and coaching vacancies being filled. And there's always a discussion about academic standards for athletes. So Wisconsin I is the UW-Madison Athletic Department. We're talking to Doug Teat. He's a UW-Madison Associate Athletic Director for Student Services about some of the academic issues with athletes. Doug, thanks for talking to Wisconsin I.
Thank you for having me.
You've been working with athletes for how long, sir?
Since 1997.
Okay.
Here at DW.
You know, this is a very intriguing subject. Let's just talk about two different areas, the admission criteria for athletes and then the grade point or what other standards they have to meet when they're in here. Let's talk about admission standards first. The admission criteria, just a very naive question. Is it different for athletes to get into a prestigious university like Madison?
No, it's not. The admissions policy is the same. So student athletes fall under the same guidelines, criteria, the holistic process that all students are under. I think some institutions have set criteria, GPA, class rank, that sort of thing, but Wisconsin takes a much different approach. So the admissions office is the decision maker. Decision upon a variety of factors, leadership, extracurricular activities, talents, and certainly scholarship or scholarly ability, and I think they admit students who they feel will have a great opportunity to, and certainly to graduate.
I know recruiting is a huge part of the business for all colleges and mm-hmm. universities. So when somebody goes out from the UW-Madison and finds a potential athlete that they may want to come here, mm-hmm. do they check their academic standards with the admissions agency prior to
sure.
that?
Yeah, so we have a, within the Office of Academic Services, which I'm sure we'll speak a bit about more here, the coaches have a pretty good sense about what the profile looks like for admission, but they certainly will contact us. All of the students come on recruiting visits. So one of the requirements for coming on a recruiting visit is you have to actually have a transcript on file.
Well, you do.
So that then in itself, I mean, it would bring certainly attention to a student who doesn't have certain certain standards that we think would minimally would be meet. One of the challenges that coaches face, especially in some of the sports like volleyball, softball, they're recruiting students freshman, sophomore year of high school, sometimes eighth grade even. And so obviously a freshman or sophomore student can go a really good direction or a bad direction. So it those coaches really have a challenge in their hands at times when they're trying to recruit a student, just not knowing what their academic potential is. But for the most part, coaches recruit really good students, and it works out well in the end.
So a junior undergrad in UW-Madison in English has to have the same admission standards as a starting junior on the UW football team, right?
An undergrad, so someone who's
undergrad.
In college right now.
Yeah,
the same. Once you're in the institution, the standards are exactly the same. There are NCAA standards for being eligible, which are outside the institution. So student athletes have the same, you know, if they're on probation or if they honor rolls, things like that. That's all the same, whether you're a student athlete or a student. Now, student athletes will also, the Big Ten will honor you for having a 3.0 GPA and being a great athlete, academic All Big Ten, mm-hmm. which we had 58 academic All Big Tens this last fall.
58 out of how many student
well,
athletes?
It's a fall season, so I don't know how many sports. I mean, it's not like we 800 student athletes normally, but not all 800 were participating this fall. So
okay,
depending on the season, exactly. So there's a fall, winter, and a spring. Awards for the Big Ten. But regarding the academic standards, then students have to maintain a 2.0 GPA once you are in school, in your beginning of your junior year. It's kind of a gradually increases, so they allow for some goof-ups your first year, of course. But for the most part, our student athletes here don't face NCAA ineligibility issues. If anything, the standards of the UW are such that will trump the NCAA standards in terms of having eligibility issues. It'll be the institution which would have a priority over the NCAA because the NCAA standards just are, you know, are minimal compared to what it is to be successful here.
Without getting into personalities in terms of coaching, let me ask this question. With three football coaches in 2 years, is tougher standards a reason that, do you think, are we getting athletes at UW-Madison that, are we not getting some athletes at UW-Madison that are going to other Big Ten schools or at universal standards?
Well, I think you'd have to certainly talk to each individual student about why they chose to go to the school they went to. But I think ultimately we should embrace the academic standards that we have here. I think that coaches will use that to our advantage in recruiting. I mean, they're gonna promote the academic programming we have here, and students who really are serious about education will come here because of that. I don't know if students leave or choose to go elsewhere because of the academics. I'm sure that there are coaches who would like to recruit students who maybe have athletic ability and they're not able to get them into school here. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, the coaches know what the standards are. Our program have been successful. I mean, we're one of the top institutions. If you look at our success both on the field and off the field, regardless of what sport it is, I mean, basketball, track, football, they've been a really tremendous ride. And I think both academically and athletically, students have done really well. We have, our student grade point average is about a 3.0. About 300 of the 800 students make a dean's list or an honor roll every year.
300 of the 800 athletes?
Of the 800 student athletes, yeah. So okay. It's some pretty remarkable stuff. And so that's all part of it. It's not just athletic or academic. It's a combination.
Okay. So they have to meet the same standards as anybody else applying to Madison?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any way that someone, a student athlete, is admitted on probation or any type of...
No. Student athletes are admitted as any other student is. They're either admitted or denied. And student athletes are denied admission just as regular students are. But the admissions office is the ultimate determining group that decides whether a student has the profile to be successful here.
Okay. Of the 800 student athletes, how many of them are scholarship athletes?
About 350, I believe. That's a number I'm just throwing out there. 300 to 350, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Now, obviously not all scholarship athletes are the ones that are on the dean's list, but right. That's about how many are scholarship.
So every athlete, no matter if they're competing in women's volleyball or football or hockey, has to maintain a 2.0?
Yes.
And that's the overall average.
Yes.
What advice do they get in terms of what classes to take and enroll in, sir?
Sure. So every NCAA institution, Division I institution, has a really required to have programming in place which will support student athletes. And we have a very comprehensive, intensive program here, and there's a few different components to it. So the class decision making is one in which we have advisors, academic advisors, who work with campus advisors as well, but of course selection, progress towards degree. We've been talking a lot about GPA and the 2.0, but there's also some other progress where students have to be able to show they can graduate in 5 years. So if I'm a non-student athlete and I just want to hang around and work on two or three majors,
right.
I could, but as a student athlete, we really need to focus on making progress towards one degree, which is there's a 40, 60, 80% degree requirement you need when you do that. So who helps with that then are the academic advisors, the people who make sure that students are taking classes that they want to take. They work in conjunction with the advisors on campus. We also have learning specialists who are the individuals who help coordinate academic plans. So more the day-to-day grind, the helping with assignment completion, making sure that people are prioritizing, stuff like that. So they're another serious component. We have mentors who really do a lot with transitioning from high school to college, mm-hmm. working on organizational skills, study skills, things like that. And there's a whole other developmental part of our office, which is student development, which really focuses on career development, employer relations, leadership, things like that. So again, as you can tell, it's a very, very broad department in terms of the support that's provided for academics within athletics for student athletes.
You said something I find very intriguing. If I'm a scholarship athlete and I commit to the UW in my senior year, at what point, I understand all the coaches are working with me on my athletic skills, but at what point is there an intercession with someone from the academic standpoint?
Yeah. That's a great question, and the academic folks would like to tell you that it's not soon enough. They would like to interact sooner. So you really can have a lot of contact with student athletes. They sign a national letter of intent or they commit to the university. And then there are certain limitations about what you can and can't do. What's really been helpful recently is over the past 5 or 6 years now, the NCAA has loosened up some of its restrictions, I guess, and allowed us to have contact with students in the summer. So many of our student athletes will come in the summer prior to the fall enrollment, mm-hmm. enroll in 6 credits of summer school. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we can really help students in terms of helping them transition with the high school to college environment, not just coming in on August 30th and, you know, being dumped into a classroom and saying, now survive. So that's been really helpful. And we do a lot of transitioning and some programming in the summer prior to the fall enrollment, which is really helpful. And then there's assessments and there's evaluations that happen in the summer then as well for a variety of our sports.
It seems to me, as a follower of Madison Athletics Group, do we get very many students who come in and say, I'm going to, one and done is Bo's term. Mm-hmm. I know Bo doesn't like that one and done type. Do we have fewer athletes who play maybe one or two seasons and then try to go pro than other Division I colleges, sir?
I don't think so. I think I've never done any research to compare the statistics, but I think the philosophy I think of Wisconsin has always been one in which you, the walk-on stuff where students walk on earned scholarships, they really work their way to be to developing, and I think basketball has been that way. You can kind of just look historically about the number of basketball players, both men and women, I guess, they mostly stay here for the duration of their career. And football is similar. I mean, there are certainly students, Melvin Gordon, of course, now who has the opportunity to pursue professional opportunities.
He's going pro as a junior, right, after junior year?
Well, it's after he's got 1 year of eligibility left because yes. he didn't play his first year.
He was
redshirted.
Redshirted, okay.
So, in that regard, it's true. But, I certainly would support Melvin in what he's doing, given that this is an opportunity for him to, provide for his family and for a career. And he'll come back when he's done with his professional athletic stuff and finish up from an academic standpoint.
UW-Madison doesn't seem to get as many transfers from the junior colleges as others. Why?
Because it's a difficult school, bottom line. Junior college transfers coming into Wisconsin, it's just a very difficult fit. Many times the courses that junior college students have taken don't necessarily transfer indirectly. It's one thing to be from a four-year school to a four-year school, but from a junior college, it's difficult at times. Many times it works out fine, but it's just, we talked about the progress before, the 40, 60, 80, so percent of your degree. So coming in with 60% of your degree intact is difficult sometimes. And sometimes students want to pursue a certain major, and those majors have had to have a lot of coursework done prior to the beginning of your junior year, which is when most students would come in as a junior college transfer. So it does work sometimes, but just not like probably many institutions, which might have more general studies or more majors which are more broad. We're very specific, and it just doesn't work very well.
It also seems that it's rare for some graduate students, with the exception of Russell Wilson, right, who had got his degree from
South Carolina.
South Carolina. He came and he played as a graduate student. We don't get very many graduate students, right?
Not transferring in, no. He took advantage of a rule which states that you can finish, if you finish your degree and you still have years of eligibility left, you can actually go to another institution and play your final year.
Okay.
That's what Russell did. He finished his degree from South Carolina, University of Carolina, came up here and then competed. We do have many students in graduate school, cases where students will have redshirted their first year, have gone through their undergraduate curriculum and have completed, and then their fifth year while they're still competing, they're actually in graduate school. So that's a benefit of that has been that coming in the summer prior to your fall enrollment, I mean, you're getting 6 credits that summer prior to you ever being on campus, and then if you take summer school for 3 or 4 years, you've got your degree completed and you're actually able to go to grad school, which is a tremendous opportunity.
Are the standards difference between Division I, II, and III? Do they vary widely?
They do, but I'm not knowledgeable enough about the Division II and III standards to comment on them. But there are some differences. The biggest part is that scholarship dollars, which are available at the Division I level, certain sports needing to have, you have to offer so many sports to be a Division I institution compared to Division II. In Division III, there are no scholarship dollars available.
Okay, if I'm a scholarship athlete at UW-Madison, and it's in season for my sport, or maybe whether it's in or out of season, what's a typical day in terms of academic? I have to go to class, and then do I have to meet with a mentor or someone? Just walk me through a typical day.
Yeah, I think in season and out of season doesn't change much from an academic standpoint. There are certain time requirements athletically which put more pressure on individuals when they're in season. Obviously, competing is another stressor, another demand. But it's all individually based. So some coaches may want their students to enroll or participate in a study table and organize study sessions. Some coaches...
What's a study table?
Sure. So a study table is basically a study hall where people are required to put in so many hours to study quietly. We have tutors that come to those sessions, and the facility we have, the Student Athlete Performance Center, one of the areas is our Fetzer Academic Center, so that's an area where there are many, many study rooms, 30-some study rooms where students can meet with tutors individually. So that's part of it. I mentioned before our learning specialists, the people who work really one-on-one, day-to-day work, those individuals will meet with our students as they need to. So it's just a variety of options. Some coaches will want their students to put in 20 hours of Fetzer hours. So 20 hours of work within the Fetzer Academic Center during the week. So it's a variety based upon what coaches really
want. If I'm a tutor or a learning specialist, do I have the right to meet with the athlete's instructor or prof on his or her progress?
Not our tutor. So we have a full-time staff, which the advisors and learning specialists are considered. Our tutors are hired as hourly graduate students, professionals who may have a specific area of expertise. So we'll hire people in that regard. Sometimes we hire undergraduate students for tutors, but not normally. So those folks, no, we don't want our tutors contacting our instructors. Our advisors and our learning specialists, they do contact instructors. I think that relationship and that understanding about how, what the demands are in both areas and what expectations are something that's really valuable. And it especially comes in handy when, maybe someone was injured or we have a crisis we need to deal with. So it's about relationships and having a positive working relationship with campus, and we do that. Our coaches are not allowed to contact professors or academic folks on campus as well. We want to keep that clean. Not that they wouldn't ever do anything wrong, just that I think it's really important that we keep a distinct line between athletics and academics, that's why our academic staff is the ones that make
Well, then how do you monitor, number one, whether a student athlete is attending class, and number two, whether she or he is keeping up with the assignments in that class?
So the attendance monitoring is a couple different varieties of ways we do it. We send out progress reports 2 to 3 times a semester, soliciting feedback from professors, and one of the radio buttons you can click on is whether or not students attending regularly. Mm-hmm. We get grade reports, again, at other times of the year as well, especially first-year students, we get grade reports on them as well. But another way we monitor attendance for the students that we're concerned about is we have students monitored by attendance checkers, if you will. So people actually will go to the class, make sure...
So they're fellow students?
Fellow students, or again, people who may be available during a certain time of the day. But we'll go in and monitor class attendance. Now, it seems maybe very elementary, very rudimentary, but for our first-year students, we want to make sure they know what success means, what it looks like, and we feel as a department we have an obligation to the students, and we hope they have an obligation to us that we, that they perform and do what they have to do. It's for the same reason that some professors have attendance that they require.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. They want the students to get the information that they need, and we're trying to encourage this.
And the student athletes know which of their fellow students are keeping track of their attendance?
Yep. Yeah, we don't.
Do the athletes resent that, sir?
I'm sure some are less than happy with it, but we're not trying to trick anybody into thinking that, oh, well, now we caught you. That's not what it's about. It's about having them know that the requirement is that you attend class. That's an expectation. And Just like, you know, I guess practice at it before a game. I mean, you got to practice to perform, and going to class is practicing, you learn the materials. So, yeah, I'm sure some students wish that they didn't have people checking their attendance, but those are probably the students who are likely to not want to go to class.
What are the most common majors for our student athletes?
Oh, it's a variety of majors, and it's really one of the things that we really look at is to make sure we don't have clustering. The clustering is a concern nationwide with students, making sure that you don't have a certain group of students that are a large number of students in one major. And while the institution, the Board of Regents, I guess, certifies the majors are legitimate, we still are concerned about that. So we have over 100 different majors that our student athletes major in. You will see some, I'll use the word, I don't want to use the word clustering, but you know, hockey, for instance, may have this desired. They're all econ majors. I mean, just I think as word travels amongst the team. But if you look across sports, there's not one specific major that's more prevalent than others. And we'll have more kinesiology majors on campus than I think campus would, because it's Phi Ed and it's working with the body and kinetics. And so we have that as a higher probably percentage than what campus does. Communication arts related majors, a lot of our people want to be involved with communication related fields, so that's higher. There are, you know, there are different areas amongst different sports.
Well, is there any, if I'm a scholarship athlete at a major institution like this, is there an average of how many hours a week I would spend either in practice or in games? Is there a universal average, or is that all over the lot? Because you had travel time in there. I mean, our basketball team is playing where today? They're playing
Berkeley.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah.
There's a 20-hour maximum of hours you can put into your sport. And
is that an NCAA rule?
Yes, NCAA rule. So that's the maximum. And then there are out of season different requirements. It drops down to 8 hours during certain time frames. You know, in the summer, I mentioned we talk about the summer school. Coaches have limited contact with their students in the summer prior to their fall enrollment. There's just different time frames of that. So the NCAA records and it makes us record the hours. So there are limits on that of time that's committed. And travel isn't part of that, but time and practice. And
is there an overall graduation rate within 5 years for our 800 student athletes, sir?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways of, I think, measuring success, and graduation rate is certainly one of them. So our overall student athletes graduate at 71%. That's what the
Within the 5 year period?
Well, it's 6 years. The
NCAA
is a 6 year period. So the students who entered back in 2007-08 and graduated in 2013-14, that would be the year to calculate the data. So that's 71%. Now, the students on campus are about 83%, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we're not there. But one of the goals that we have in the Office of Academic Services is to graduate students at a rate that's similar to campus. So that's a goal we need to continue to work on.
Okay.
One of the factors that really plays a, I think that plays a role within graduation rates is the opportunity for some students to transfer and the opportunity to pursue professional opportunities. So, you know, we mentioned before that, you know, Melvin Gordon pursuing professional opportunities. I mean, I consider Melvin to be a success. He's been here for 4 years. He's a great student. He's going to leave here in good academic shape. But if he has a professional career, which is beneficial and fruitful for him, mm-hmm. He'll be a knock against us in a graduation rate because he didn't graduate in 6 years. If a student were to transfer to pursue some opportunities because they have a chance to play, or maybe they can't play here because of the, you know, maybe it's a really good team and they don't have the chance, then transferring away from here will be a knock against us.
Okay.
So those are things that are really impact the graduation rate significantly here. A graduation success rate kind of throws those things out I just mentioned. Transferring out, you don't count. Transferring in, you do count. And then if you leave professionally and you leave in good academic standing, you're not counted. In that regard, is a better measure. And that's, we graduate at 84% rate there, which is a much better rate. Now, you can't compare that to campus because there isn't a success rate on campus, but that's a rate that we're pleased with.
Do the graduation rates vary by sport? Our three major revenue, football, basketball, hockey, are they higher than women's volleyball, for example?
No, I think sports do fluctuate. Certain sports will attract stronger students.
Which sport has the highest graduation rate?
Oh, I don't know. I can check here. Looks like men's tennis has done well. Women's soccer's done well. Women's tennis has done well. I mean, you've got the cross country teams have done well. Rowing teams have done remarkably well.
I'm just curious, what's football, since we're looking at a bowl game?
Football is, the graduation success rate is 69%.
Okay, that's within 6 years?
6 years, again, these are all 6-year rates. Yeah.
And then basketball?
Men's basketball is not so great right now. That's at a graduation success rate of 40%.
40%?
Yeah.
And that's over what window?
So from the students who entered in 2007, and it's a 4-year average, So those who entered in 07, 08, 05, 06, 05, 04, and I guess 03, 04, if I'm doing the math right there.
Okay.
So those 4 years are averaged together, and the N is so small with basketball especially that you lose one or two students that make
that
a decision.
That affects that
tremendously.
And then hockey? Well, we're looking at the big three?
Yeah, men's hockey is 65%. That's their graduation success rate.
Okay.
And hockey faces challenges too because really significant challenges given that if you're a hockey student athlete and your season ends March or April, you've signed a contract already, so you get pulled away to go play in the professional ranks. And sometimes you're able to come back to school, sometimes you're not. And so therefore, if you don't leave here eligible, if you were enrolled in classes, you didn't finish them because of professional pursuits, that's a serious knock against the results or the statistics as well.
Okay. Thanks for your time. We're almost out of time, so I just have a few more questions. The recent changes by the NCAA give the five power conferences, of which the Big Ten is certainly one,
yes,
more discretion. Does it give the schools in the Big Ten, like Wisconsin, more discretion in terms of the academic standards, or does it deal with academic standards?
It does not. Not at
it does
this
not.
Time. It does
okay.
not.
But it does deal with giving students potentially more financial, athletes more financial stipends.
That's correct. I'm not sure the word stipend is a word I would use, but right now, that's a possibility, but right now where the focus really is, and it'll be, I think in January, there'll be some serious conversations and discussions about the legislation moving forward about cost of attendance.
Yes.
So putting more money in students' pockets in some capacity in terms of, money's in addition to tuition fees, books, room and board, we all have additional costs, and getting monies in students' hands that truly reflect what the cost of attendance looks like, travel, phones, other things like that, incidentals. So there will be legislation passed that will, I'm pretty confident, that will address that. That's one that's really important.
There's a question that I've forgotten I want to come back to. Student athletes must maintain a 2-point GPA.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they don't? Are they put on probation? Can they no longer compete? What's the process then?
Yeah, if they don't meet the NCAA standard of a 2.0 after of being here after your sophomore year, they they're ineligible until that GPA gets back above that standard. So,
is that GPA standard for the traditional school year, which is two semesters, or can it be just based on one semester?
It is certification. It depends upon students are certified at the beginning of every school year, and then at semester as well. So if you're a basketball student athlete competing and your GPA would drop below 2.0 as a junior, I said sophomore after a junior year, sophomores are 1.9 GPA requirement. So if it drops below that and it's January, you can't compete the next semester because until your GPA would be back up to where it needs to be.
One other question that I had just emerged because of the ruling on Jameis Winston case. Do all Wisconsin athletes or do all Division I athletes have to also enter into a code of conduct, sir?
I believe each institution has their own code of conduct. We have a code of conduct for our student athletes, and they, it's written. It's in our student athlete handbook. It's on our website, and students are they're required to abide by it. Kind of an aside to this too. One of the things which Wisconsin's always done is regarding this autonomy piece is the scholarships, 4-year scholarships. We've always honored scholarships for 4 years, but one of the things that is being pushed forward as part of this autonomy legislation is that that would be something that would be required across the board, that all students put in four-year scholarships. And part of that contingency, of course, would be that if students don't follow their code of conduct as written by their institution. So, you know, depending upon the school, that could be a little variability there.
So somebody who might be grumbling after that not too good showing against Ohio State, and somebody, an alumni like me, who might say, gee, is Wisconsin losing athletes because of our academic standards? What's your answer to perhaps disgruntled alumni?
Well, my answer is that, we need to embrace it. We need to be proud of our academic standards. We've shown a track record of winning here successfully, and I don't think that one game should be the measuring stick for our successes. And I'd encourage that person to cheer for Ohio State, another Big Ten school, at next week.
Yeah, because they just made the final. Yeah, what's the biggest challenge for you in your job?
Man, that's a tough question. Many challenges. I think that the challenges are just that you've really helping students become individuals who understand what sort of opportunity is in front of them. I think as you know, students come in as 17, 18-year-olds, and they just don't realize the impact that those 4 years really have. And the challenge we have is just trying to continue to impress upon them how important it is to take school seriously, participate in anything you can, whether it's on campus activities or getting involved in student groups, just helping people realize that, because it's once it's gone, and you can't go back and try to relive it.
Maybe a final question. Are there more distractions on the UW-Madison campus than on other distractions from academic studies, sir, than on other campuses?
Well, I'd like to think that given our high academic standards that we need to certainly have students understand that the demands of academics is really, really important. I know there was a coach a few years ago who said that, you know, there are three challenges within the athletic world. There are demands for academics, there are athletic demands that you've never faced before as a college student coming in, and you're going to have more social opportunities than you ever have had before. And there are three things that are really important, but you only can do two of them well. And you've got to pick which two you do well. And to be successful here, you better hope you pick the academic and athletic components.
Sounds like very good advice. Doug Teat, UW-Madison Associate Athletic Director for Student Services, thanks so much for talking to Wisconsin. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me again. Thank you.
Thank you.